Hello, this is Dr. S.H. Early. You are listening to Shirley, You Can't Be Serious podcast. Scientifically speaking, it is the best podcast out there. I'm glad you found it. What a discovery. Look at you. Anyways, again, this is Dr. S.H. Early, not to be confused with Shirley. Please, don't call me Shirley. And as always, I'm quite serious. Enjoy.
Hey, Jason, I was checking the calendar, see if we had any kind of cool dates coming up. It ain't White Boy Day, is it?
No, man, it ain't White Boy Day.
Now, I know I'm pretty, but I ain't as pretty as a couple of
I've already seen that movie, and I ain't hungry.
Welcome back to the Shirley You Can't Be Serious podcast, ladies and gentlemen. And guys, girls, out there in your cars, on your headphones, with your radio, let me just tell you, whatever you guys are doing, keep it up. You look great. You look fantastic. You're so cool. You're so cool. All right, everybody. We are here with our big bad combination. It's the one that says bad mother. This is the matchup between True Romance and Natural Born Killers. Now, there may be some of you out there that do not know the connection between these two movies, and I'm excited to tell you that story, but without giving too much away, let me just say Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, so here's the interesting thing that these movies have in common with me. This is a time in my life where I went to the movie theater to see almost everything. I did not see either one of these movies in the theater. I was like, what was I doing? What was going on that weekend? Maybe there was some other big movie that drew my attention. Here's what was going on in the movie theater. So True Romance was released September 10th, 1993. Okay. So the three biggest movies at the box office that weekend was The Fugitive.
That was big.
Yeah. I mean, that really had my attention.
That's the movie I was going to see. Yeah.
No doubt about it. Right. Undercover Blues.
I don't know what that is.
I think that's Dennis Quaid and Kathleen Turner, maybe? No?
No.
And then third at the box office was True Romance, okay?
Right.
Now then, the weekend of August 26th, 1994, that's the weekend that Natural Born Killers came out.
Yes.
94, I was in college, I had money at my disposal, we went to the movies all the time, and especially during the summer. Here are the movies that were released that weekend.
Okay.
Natural Born Killers, Camp Nowhere, It's Pat.
Oh.
And Police Academy 7.
Okay. So this kind of helps answer the question that I had, which is how did one of these movies become a big box office smash and the other one was a box office failure? True Romance was competing against The Fugitive.
Yeah.
And The Fugitive was huge. I think it grossed $12.3 on a $12.5 million budget.
Here's the thing that I don't really understand about myself. All the ingredients to be a Jason movie, right?
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's action-packed, it's shootout, it's Tony Scott.
It's Tony Scott.
I love Tony Scott movies.
Tony Scott in his full-on Top Gun tricks out
Beverly
of the hat.
Beverly Hills Cop 2. It went under my radar, and I never saw it until about a week ago.
A week ago. You
week
did
ago.
Not see this movie in the last 30 years.
No,
holy
I didn't.
Holy cow.
In fact, I wasn't even really sure what it was about. Like when you're like, hey, we need to do this. I'm like, all right, you know.
Oh, yeah. I was telling somebody else about it this morning, and I was like, well, we're comparing, Natural Born Killers to True Romance. And she was like, is that the Jamie Lee Curtis? I'm like, no, that's True Lies. She's that combination did not make any sense to me. I'm like, no, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. In answer to the mystery, one of these movies was a box office bomb.
Yeah.
The other one was a huge success because it was competing against Police Academy 7.
Right.
I mean, that was its biggest competition, right? And so, yeah, Natural Born Killers, I remember seeing that in the theater. Like,
okay.
That was, and I had just started college. That was August of 94. I would have just started college.
Right.
And me and my guys who were from my high school that I went to college with, we went out and saw that movie, and it blew my freaking mind.
I know you've made this claim before that 1994 is the greatest year for movies of all time.
Yes.
I don't know that I totally agree with that, but I do know that nearly every weekend I was seeing something at the movie theater.
Well, it was a time, I mean, from 92 to 94, you witnessed an absolute shift in what kind of movies people were going to go watch.
Right. And Quentin Tarantino is largely responsible for that shift, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, I would say 90% responsible for it. I mean, it was him. It was hugely him. Now, obviously, the audience wanted something different, and things go in cycles. And so you had the kind of gritty, the good guys don't always win stuff from the 70s into the 80s, where, you know, people may be crappy for three quarters of the movie, but they turn out to be okay at the end. Prime example is any Bill Murray movie. He's a jerk for three quarters of the movie, and then right. by the last act of the movie, we're like, okay, turns out he's a lovable guy and redeemed, right? And so, yeah, when Tarantino jumps into the scene, he brings back that unpredictable style of the 70s in an entirely different way. And that's why I still maintain 90s is the best decade for movies ever.
So he went from video store clerk to Reservoir Dogs to True Romance to Pulp Fiction to Natural Born Killer. I mean, he's it goes from nothing to 1,000 miles an hour in just a year or two.
A high school dropout. He has got a book out now, which is his. He goes and addresses the movies that he watched during the 70s that influenced him as a human being and a film, ultimately a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. So his mother was from Kentucky. She meets a guy in L.A., quick romance. They get married. She gets pregnant. Before Quentin is even born, dad moves away to Hollywood because he wants to be an actor. Quentin Tarantino did not know his father. So his mom would date people and, you know, she was getting by, so she would have roommates. And these people, including his mom, would take him to movies like Deliverance. Or Joe, which is, if you don't know that movie, it's Peter Boyle and Susan Sarandon in her first movie. It is a mind F.
Okay.
It is, yeah. But he fell in love with movies as a kid because he got to watch grown-up movies as a little kid going with his mom's boyfriend. And his mom's boyfriend sometimes was black. And so he got introduced to the blaxploitation movies of the 70s as well. And so at some point, he figures out how to get a couple of movie scripts. And once he gets them, he's like, this is terrible. Like, this is not what I was expecting at all. Because he would read books. He'd read Pulp Fiction.
Interesting
books, yep. And he loved that writing, but then he sees these movie scripts, and the first two of them, it's just terrible. It was hard to get back then, you know, there wasn't Drew's Scriptorama back then. And so the third one that he comes across is a script by Walter Hill.
Really?
Yes, called Hard Times. And he said when he read that, suddenly he saw how a script could be something that was made to read, not just something to start the process of a movie.
Okay.
And so it's funny because with Natural Born Killers, it's a different script than what we get in the movie.
Right.
It says he gets story credit and it's real short. I was watching, I was like, whoa, they just blew by Tarantino's name like in a half second where everybody else had gotten 2 seconds of opening credit time. And then it says screenwriting and it lists the two producers and Oliver Stone, right? And so I heard, hey, the original script is out there. You can get it. And so I read the original script. Now, Tarantino will say, I've never watched the whole movie. I watched up until the scene with Rodney Dangerfield.
Work.
What work? I'm unemployed. Where the f*** have you been, huh?
Well, you look nice, Mallory.
Yuck, you look like...
Thanks,
Mom. And then I was like, nope, I'm done. He disowned it. He doesn't like it. He told people not to go see it. And I have to say, having read the script, it's actually very much like the movie.
The whole world's coming to an end, Mal.
The big difference is that Oliver Stone puts more emphasis on the crime spree at the beginning and does that weird crap with the Indian that they kill. That is new, but basically everything else was in Tarantino's script. Now, what was in Tarantino's script that was not in the movie is this big courtroom scene where they're being tried for some of the murders. One of the murders in particular, Mickey Knox is representing himself. So he's asking a witness who was, you know, her brother was murdered. He's asking her all of these questions. And I'm sorry, spoiler here, if you haven't read the script, he's asking these questions like just trying to get under her skin. And then as it seems like he's finished and he's resting his case, he grabs a pencil and plunges it into her chest on the witness stand, murdering her in front of the jury.
Interesting. Okay.
One of the things that he mentions in there is Unruly Julie, which is the girl who is Wayne Gale's secretary go-to girl, but he calls her Unruly Julie in the script. That would be meaningless if you're watching the movie because she's mute.
Right.
They only call her Julie. They don't call her Unruly Julie. They just call her Julie, but he refers to her as Unruly Julie, which I'm just thinking, you're making this because you want people to read it. You want people to read this script.
Yeah.
And so when he had read Walter Hill, he saw how that could be done.
By the way, side note, I listened to an interview with Stephen D'Souza, the guy who wrote Die Hard. Mm-hmm. He hates Walter Hill. He friggin' hates Walter Hill, which I always find it interesting because there's going to be a character in True Romance that is based off of another director hating a producer, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah. So he's 13 years old. And he says, okay, I'm going to try to write my first script. And so he tries to write an ABC after school special.
Yeah, right.
It didn't go so well. 1977, he starts writing a script that he calls Captain Peach Fuzz and the Anchovies Bandit.
Yeah.
Can you guess what movie from 1977 he was referencing on that one?
That is based on Smokey the Bandit.
Yeah. He made it 27 pages. Then he saw Paradise Alley with Sylvester Stallone, and he's like, okay, I'm going to write that three Italian friends movie. Calls it Brooklyn VR, to quote Tarantino, and he's like, yeah, the VR don't mean shit, just like Reservoir Dogs.
Okay.
Doesn't mean anything. Okay. Made it 35 pages on that one.
Okay.
And then he's working in the video store, working with a guy named Roger Avery. Quentin Tarantino is the guy in the video store that everybody goes to for movie recommendations because his knowledge of cinema is so vast.
Right.
But he's making minimum wage.
Right.
Did you work in a video store? What was your high school job?
I worked at Mazzio's Pizza.
Yeah.
But I frequented the video store near my house. And I did hear him say, they said, man, did you go to film school? He goes, no, I went to films.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what he did. And if
he's a student of films.
If you're thinking about Christian Slater, Clarence in True Romance, just, hey, it's his birthday. What's he going to do? He's going to go watch a triple kung fu feature, right?
Yeah.
And so as he's working the video store, he's finally comes up with this idea that he's like, I'm making this my own story. I'm not just copying somebody else's story. So this is the script that I'm actually going to finish. That script was True Romance. Yeah. Now, he, as I mentioned, quit high school. Okay. Like he was skipping school and his mom got on to him. He's like, I just skipped one day and then I skipped another day and I kept skipping the days. And it was like, this is great. And then the school called his mom and she bawled him out. And he was like, I don't want to go back. And finally, she was like, fine, don't go back to school. Don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was right after, by the way, he had been grounded for stealing an Elmore Leonard novel from Kmart.
I saw that. Yes. And I wanted to talk to you about that.
Yeah.
Because I am an Elmore Leonard fan.
I know. That's why I had to mention it.
Well, thank you. I just got into him basically a couple years ago when Justified came out. I was like, man, this is fantastic. Yes. I need more from this guy. But I see a lot of similarities between Elmore Leonard's work and Quentin Tarantino's work.
Yes. Yeah.
You take interesting, sort of edgy people.
Yeah.
And you make them likable or interesting in some way. I mean, it's the same formula. Drug dealers and pimps and prostitutes and
you take standard tropey characters, but you do them in an entirely different way.
Yeah.
So after high school, after he drops out of high school, he says, not a year has gone by that in September, I don't say, thank God I don't have to go back to school. And so he lies about his age and he gets a job as an adult movie theater usher.
Somebody's got to clean up there.
And then he works at Video Archives, that place that he worked at with Roger Avery in Manhattan Beach, California. He and Roger Avery are working with actors. They're doing stuff in the theater. He comes up with some script ideas for this movie called My Best Friend's Birthday. And they spend months and years kind of putting this very cheap thing together. But many of the lines from My Best Friend's Birthday end up in his True Romance script. And so he's written this giant thing, as I said, dropped out of high school, punctuation's terrible. He's got lines drawn and pages pasted with glue, and it's all handwritten and about 300 pages long and bound with rubber band. And he gives it to Roger Avery. And he said, Roger Avery is the only other human being in the world who has read that original script other than me.
Of True Romance?
True Romance.
Okay.
Now, as it happens, the character of Clarence in True Romance, Christian Slater's character, is Quentin Tarantino.
It is Quentin Tarantino.
It's easy.
Do you like to get pie after you see a good movie?
Yeah, I love to get pie after a movie.
Would you like to go get some pie with me?
I love some pie.
Kung fu movies, working at the video store. Like,
doesn't really Clarence have a girlfriend. Yeah.
Comic book store. He works at a video store.
That's it.
Yeah. And as it happens, since it is him and he's writing a script, he has Clarence writing a script as well.
Yeah.
So when Clarence gets involved in these big adventures with these drugs and pimps and mafia and all of this, while all that's going on, he's also writing this script about two mass murdering lovebirds. And that script is Natural Born Killers.
What do you have to say to your fans?
You ain't seen nothing yet.
You told me this, and that blew my socks off. I think that's a fantastic, very interesting nugget, the idea that Clarence is the author of Natural Born Killers. The Quentin Tarantino universe is fascinating to me.
Yeah, and Roger Avery not only reads this script, which is basically two scripts in one,
right?
But he types it out in proper script format. They're friends. You know, just imagine these are like 20-something year old guys working in a video store. They're hanging out in somebody's apartment talking about the script and like, yeah, well, you know, this joke works, but this one's not as good. And I don't know that anybody's going to want to make a 3-hour movie. Maybe we should take the script that Clarence is writing out and make that a separate script, right? And so this is all Roger Avery, who is a producer of Quentin Tarantino's movies. They had some sort of falling out, and they didn't talk to each other for about 20 years.
Okay.
Until just the last couple of years, and now they have a new podcast that is called Video Archives, named after the...
Really?
The video rental place that they used to work together at. Yeah. They want to sell them. The plan is, if we sell True Romance, then I think I can get $30,000 for that. And that will be enough for me to make this other movie that at this point is just an idea in his head. Okay.
Right.
Just an idea. He just has this idea in his head, but he's at this party. He's thinking they're going to get $30,000 for the script True Romance. And he's going to be able to write this to direct this just idea at this point, which is a dialogue driven heist film.
Okay.
Right.
Right.
And so he's at a party and he meets this guy named Lawrence Bender.
Okay.
Now, Lawrence Bender worked as a grip on the Tales from the Dark Side.
The movie with Christian Slater?
No, the series.
Oh.
Right. Exactly. In 89, he teamed up with Sam Raimi and they made the film Intruder together. You seen that?
No.
No, me neither.
Never heard of it. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I thought too. So basically, this is a guy, like, we've met these guys before, like, oh yeah, I was involved in this film. Wow, that's amazing. What are you doing now? Not much.
Yeah, right.
So he was a grip, and he helped Sam Raimi write a movie that nobody watched, right?
Okay.
And so he meets Tarantino at this party. Tarantino says, I've got this, you know, I got this heist film, but it's really all about the conversation. And Lawrence Bender's like, that sounds really good. You should write it. And so that's what he does. Tarantino goes and writes the screenplay in 3.5 weeks, brings it back to Lawrence Bender, and he's like, this is the movie I want to make, and I'm going to sell my True Romance script to make it. And Lawrence Bender's like, listen, you may be able to get real money for this, right? This may be something that you can get real money for, not just piddly money for. So let me see what I can do. And so he options the script. And for 3 months, they work to get Reservoir Dogs made. As that's happening, another company picks up his True Romance script. And yet another company picks up the Natural Born Killers script. And as it turns out, the company that picked up his True Romance script has a secretary who works there who used to be the secretary for Tony Scott.
Interesting. Okay.
And so she's talking to Tarantino and he finds this out and he's like, oh my gosh, I love Tony Scott. By the way, there is a great bit that I remember from back in like 1994 when the internets were new with Tarantino talking about how Top Gun is homoerotica.
I've heard this. Yeah, I've heard it.
What is Top Gun? You think it's a story about a bunch of fighter pilots? It is a story about a man's struggle with his own homosexuality. That's it. That is what Top Gun is about, man.
So I'm not going to go there. But anyway, he was excited about meeting Tony Scott. And so she...
Let me just stop you there because I don't want to glaze over this because Tony Scott, his brother is Ridley Scott, who we know from Gladiator and Blade Alien. Runner and Alien.
Yeah.
But Tony Scott takes a back seat to nobody. Yeah. Top Gun.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills Cop 2, which we both enjoyed.
Yeah.
Days of Thunder.
Man on Fire.
Crimson Tide.
Oh, yeah.
The Last Boy Scout.
Yep. He's a rock star.
He makes great movies.
And it's tragic. You know, we went into his whole story whenever we covered Top Gun, of course. A guy with just incredible abilities who then just one day walks to the edge of a bridge and jumps off.
Still just baffles me.
Yeah. So He's still alive. Tarantino's excited to meet him. The secretary shows him the scripts for True Romance and Reservoir Dogs. And he's like, I want to direct Reservoir Dogs. And she's like, well, Tarantino really kind of wants to do that himself.
Right.
Like, that's his baby, and he wants to do that. And he's like, okay, I want to do True Romance. And she's like, well, the production company I'm working for now already has it. And they've got a director attached. And so he's like, but it could be me. Yeah. I'm Tony Scott. I mean, you know, right, it's yeah. right. I'm not this guy. I'm not this piddly little nothing guy here.
I did do Top Gun.
Yeah. And she's like, yeah, that's true. And so they had to pay the director they had attached like $100,000 just to not direct it.
Great money.
Yeah.
Great gig if you can get it.
Yes. We can pay that guy $100,000 and get Tony Scott. Done. Where do I sign
exactly,
the check?
Exactly, right?
And so that's what happens. Tony Scott becomes attached to this movie. Now, unlike the Oliver Stone experience, Tarantino says he absolutely loves True Romance.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily because they kept his script exactly as it was. Apparently, it had that non-linear thing that he does in Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. You start off where the characters seem to know more than you do, and then you kind of catch up to them in the middle, and then by the end, you know the cops are planning this
right.
thing, the mafia guys are planning this thing, the people, the director has no idea what's going on, the drugs are here, the guns are here, and the character's done.
Brilliant, yeah, brilliant.
And so, and the other major point, Clarence and Alabama die in the original script.
Yeah.
But Tarantino said, the way that Scott did it, the way that he handled it and made it what it was, it would have been wrong to kill him at the end.
Well, Tony Scott fell in love with the characters.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like this defiant thing where, like, I'm the director, I'm changing the script. Yeah. He's like, listen, I just love these characters. I couldn't let them die.
Yes.
And that to me is like, all right.
I mean, if you watch that movie, I would feel the exact same way.
I love the characters too.
If they would have killed those characters, I'd been like, what the heck?
I know. Now, Mickey and Mallory, on the other hand.
And here's this. Alternative ending was filmed to Natural Born Killers where Mickey and Mallory are killed by the narrator for The Sandlot.
Really?
Yeah. The guy who's like, hey, guys, come on. And like, he's showing them the way out of the jail. Like, they're like, how do you know about this? He's like, I come here to think sometimes. That's the guy who narrates The Sandlot, who at the end is calling the game for Benny the Jet.
Yeah.
Gosh.
That's right. Yeah. He plays older Scotty Smalls, right?
Right. And so in Natural Born Killers, he just kind of seems to show up out of nowhere, guide them to where they can sort of escape, and then he just disappears. But in an alternative ending that they filmed, he killed them.
I can't wait to get into the cast of these movies because
yeah.
they are both fantastic casts.
Right. Right.
And I've got trivia nuggets that I'm dying to tell you.
I just want to say, I want to pull out one quote that I heard about True Romance because I think it just nails it. Tony Scott's handling of Quentin Tarantino's script came off like the cinematic equivalent of a cocaine-flavored bubblegum.
Cocaine-flavored bubblegum.
That's perfect.
Huh?
That's exactly right. Like, they're both so warm and delicious, and yet they're dealing with violence and drugs and debauchery, and it's all just fan-freaking-tastic.
Cocaine-flavored bubblegum. I love it.
So now, once production actually is about to begin on both of the movies, like, they're very close to starting both True Romance and Natural Born Killers, Reservoir Dogs comes out.
Right.
It's released before these two movies. And at that point, it's such a good movie and does so well at the film festivals that they just say, hey, if you want to direct Natural Born Killers, you can.
This is an interesting story. You told me this the other day, and I was like, quite understand this, but
right,
keep going.
Yeah. And they said the same thing about True Romance. Even though Tony was already attached to it, they said, listen, if you want to direct it, you can, and Tony will be the executive producer. He won't mess with your mojo, right? You know, you've established yourself as a quality director with Reservoir Dogs, and so you can have either one of these movies. And he turned them both down. And you had the same question I had, which is, why
that,
would he
right?
do that? So the reason that he gave is they were all first movies. Reservoir Dogs, big splashy first movie. By the way, Harvey Weinstein tried to get him to take the torture scene, the ear cutting scene, out of Reservoir Dogs.
Right.
And he said, it's the most important scene in the whole
movie. It is. It's the most memorable scene too.
Yeah. And Harvey was used to getting his way. And he said, it's the most important scene in the movie. I'm not taking it out.
Wow.
And that is the way he's been for all of his scripts. He's like, the way I write my script is the way I write my script, and I'm not changing it for you or anybody else. He's like, I would write these things, and people would say, do you really think they're going to let you leave that in there? And he's like, who's they? Who is this they that's going to stop me? Because he said, I had the bravado to go, if you don't want to make the movie the way I wrote it, then I can go over to this other production company and I'll have them make it.
Yeah, he's right.
And he, yeah, the bravado worked out for him. Anyway, he had made Reservoir Dogs as a big splashy first movie. And he says, your second movie is more important than your first movie. Because you could be just a lucky flash in the pan, and so your second movie has to be of higher quality. Now, keep in mind, he has not written Pulp Fiction at the time they're offering him directing True Romance and directing Natural Born Killers.
Right.
He's going on a wing and a prayer here that he's going to make a second movie that is better than Reservoir Dogs, that is better than Natural Born Killers, and that is better than True Romance.
My second movie has to be better. I don't know what it is yet. Right. That's crazy.
Yes.
And he knows he's got two very quality movies in his back pocket.
Yeah.
Pretty ballsy, man.
Yeah. So a lot of comparisons have been made with Natural Born Killers to Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah. So to me, this is more Charles Starkweather, who was kind of a bully with a gun.
Uh-huh.
And he went on a rampage in Nebraska and he took his 13-year-old girlfriend with him and shot her parents and shot a gas station attendant for $6 and went on a wild killing spree.
Yeah.
And to me, these people resemble that couple more than Bonnie and Clyde.
Well, what's interesting, I mean, you get two life events that are being fictionalized and made into art.
Right.
So you have art imitating life. But then Oliver Stone takes it. And I mean, the quote on the poster is about the influence of the media and how, you know, these true crime things are taking, they're recycling real dramatic, traumatic events for entertainment purposes.
Right.
And then after the movie comes out, you have not one, not two, but three, four, maybe five different copycat killers that you have life and imitating art, imitating life, imitating art.
Movie really spoke to people.
And in
not a good way.
Right, yeah.
Think back to 94.
Yeah.
You have OJ. You have Lorena Bobbitt. You have the Menendez brothers. You
got Tonya Harding.
You've got Nancy Kerrigan, Tonya Harding. You have a lot of kind of these splashy news stories where people's craziness is on full display.
They were an absolute influence on how this movie turned out because they started making it before all of those things happened.
Right.
Right. And then in the midst of making it and rewriting Tarantino's script and all of this, they're like, yeah, the media is taking all of these atrocious things and just plugging everything they can for ratings. Right. I mean, we all saw the OJ thing. It's just crazy.
And, you know, people forget the Menendez brothers who they're back in the news right now.
Yeah.
That was everywhere. Before OJ took over and sucked all the oxygen out of the room.
Yeah.
Lorena Bobbitt. I don't know if people still remember that, but I definitely do. So
if you don't, Google search it. Don't click images.
Don't make your wife mad while you're sleeping. Yeah.
Okay. So we've talked about how these movies came to be. They're both just absolutely fan-freaking-tastic, according to some. We won't give our final judgment time for our final judgment, but they are both ranked in the top 250 movies of
these movies spoke to people for sure.
And I remember seeing Natural Born Killers very close in time to that time that I saw Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. I mean, same summer.
So it's kind of interesting that those things were all kind of playing out as they did, but we need to know, I mean, these movies have an incredible cast. Both of them have an incredible cast, and I can't wait to start talking to you about them.
Okay, so the cast, let's go to True Romance since it's the first one.
Sure.
Okay, so you've got Christian Slater as Clarence Worley.
You're paid to be there. What are you? Theater checker? You get paid to check up on the box office girls, make sure they're not ripping the place off.
I'm not a theater checker. Call girl.
Arkansas Dave Rudabaugh.
Arkansas Dave Rudabaugh. You know, we grew up with Christian Slater, right? He was in Legend of Billy Jean.
Yep.
He was in Young Guns 2. He was in Heathers, Gleam in the Cube. But check this out.
Yeah.
Do you remember a movie called Pump Up the Volume?
Yes.
Can you tell me what that movie is about?
I didn't watch the movie, but isn't he like a DJ or something?
He might be the world's first podcast host. Because he has a shortwave radio show where everybody tunes in and listens to him, and he just kind of talks about whatever he wants to talk about. And I'm like, Christian Slater might be the very first podcaster.
That's fantastic.
Okay. Now, he plays Clarence. Val Kilmer wanted this part.
I just played Iceman for you. Can I be Clarence? No.
No.
Can I be one of the bad guys? No. Who can I be? You can be Elvis. Ooh, cool. I get to do the hair. No, we won't see your face.
That is totally insane to me. So we might as well just talk about that. Val Kilmer plays the mentor. He doesn't play Elvis. He's the mentor.
Now, of course, the opening conversation of the movie is
about Elvis.
You know, not gay, but if I had to F a guy.
Right. And right? Yes.
Yeah.
Now, the Elvis estate would not allow this movie to use any of his songs.
Uh-huh.
And really not his likeness. You can't even tell it's Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
Okay. So Christian Slater does a great job as Clarence. I think he's fantastic.
He's perfect in this part.
Val Kilmer's a little bit too heroic at this time.
Oh, yeah.
For me to totally identify with that character.
Yeah. You're not going to believe Val Kilmer as a nerdy comic book.
Can't get a date.
Afraid. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody, a friend, has to hire a prostitute for him to get laid on his birthday kind of deal.
Now, Patricia Arquette.
Amid the chaos of that day, when all I could hear was the thunder of gunshots, and all I could smell was the violence in the air, I look back and am amazed that my thoughts were so clear and true. That three words went through my mind endlessly, repeating themselves like a broken record. You're so cool. You're so cool. You're so cool.
Who I knew from Dream Warriors Part 3. She's also Rosanna's sister.
Night on Elm Street Part 3, Dream Warriors. Yes.
Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
Yeah,
yes.
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. She plays Alabama Whitman.
Uh-huh.
Which Tarantino got the name Alabama Whitman from a Pam Grier movie, Women in Cages, where her name was Alabama.
Okay.
Tony Scott wanted Drew Barrymore. Think 93 Drew Barrymore,
no,
right? Quentin Tarantino wanted Joan Cusack in this role.
Nope.
Right?
Not hot enough. Sorry.
She's funny, quirky.
Yeah.
She's not sexy, though.
She doesn't taste like a peach.
That's right.
Yeah.
So they settled on Patricia Arquette, and here's the quote from Tony Scott. From the moment Christian Slater saw her, he had a Woody for her.
Yeah.
The attraction between those two actors was very real, on screen and off screen.
Oh, really? Did they date, I guess?
Well, apparently, according to Christian Slater, he kind of doesn't really say yay or nay.
Uh-huh.
But basically, they were both in relationships.
Huh.
They were both very tempted.
Uh-huh.
And they both tried to stay as professional as possible. Right. And
but I mean, how do you look at that in this movie?
She's fantastic.
She is oozing sexuality.
She is.
And kind, loving, fun, spunky.
I love you, baby.
She is great. And she delivers a great performance. I mean, you start with that first scene where, you know, she goes in and she spills her popcorn on him and they hang out and she's talking to him and it's all delivered. And then she is sitting on the billboard sign. Is that what it is out there? Like she's outside of the apartment, you know,
right,
crying, like boo-hooing. She is a fantastic actress. She does such a great job.
Yeah.
So just, you know, great actress and looks to boot, you know?
You and I were talking, I think one of the keys for why she's so kind of low-key, trashy, sexy.
Yeah.
You and I both agreed. The fact that she does not have perfect teeth.
Yep.
She looks like she was in the trailer park last week and she got some lipstick and she's got a nice rack and that's what she's going on, you know?
She slept with two guys.
Okay. Now, you've got Dennis Hopper as Clifford Worley. That's Christian Slater's dad. I knew him from Hoosiers.
Yeah, sure.
And then, of course, later from Speed and Waterworld.
Yeah, I didn't see either one of those.
We're going to correct that.
Yeah. Well, I saw Easy Rider. How about that? Did you see Easy Rider?
No.
Yeah. So, No, but I hope that the next person that you're mentioning is going to be Christopher Walken.
Do you know who I am, Mr. Wally?
I give up. Who are you?
The Antichrist. You got me in a vendetta kind of mood. You tell the angels in heaven you never seen evil so singularly personified as you did in the face of the man who killed you. My name is Vincent Cocotti. I work as counsel for Mr. Blue Lou Boyle, the man your son stole from. I hear you were once a cop, so I can assume you've heard of us before. Am I correct?
I've heard of Blue Lou Boyle.
I'm glad.
Because the interchange between Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken is one of the best interchanges in all
That's
of
fantastic,
movie
right?
history, right? Yeah.
And a Sicilian speech.
Yes, it comes from a conversation that Quentin Tarantino actually had with a black friend, you know, tells him this is the history and this is why the Sicilians are all dark haired and all this. They used to be blonde and blue eyed, just like the Northern Italians.
Right.
And he says he meets a Sicilian and he starts telling him this and the reaction wasn't so good. This is kind of intense. I need to keep this idea for a script.
It's so good.
All right.
Big fan of the N-word.
Yeah.
Which we're going to talk about if we get to Django Unchained here in a few weeks.
Yep.
Okay, here's an interesting tidbit for you. I've been waiting to drop this on you, okay?
Yeah.
Tarantino took a couple of lines from other movies, dropped them into True Romance as kind of a tribute to those movies. The line, "Beer is all I ever eat," which I think Christian Slater says in this movie.
Okay.
That comes from The Last Picture Show.
So, yeah, that's Jeff Bridges and
Sybil Shepherd.
Yes. Yep. Peter Bogdanovich. Thank you.
The line, "You're just like your mother," Dennis Hopper says in Rumblefish, which we covered a couple of seasons ago.
That's right. That's fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was happy to drop that one on you.
So, okay. That's really interesting. So, you know, I listened to him talking about, you know, there are these things that come up online these days of actors that you wrote a part for or that you have in mind for a particular part, right?
Right.
And so, you know, obviously he's talking about the John Travolta in Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
Because he didn't write that part for John Travolta.
Right.
He wrote it for Michael Madsen. Michael Madsen gets hooked up with Wyatt Earp instead, and so they can't have him. And so they're like, hey, you're on fire. You know, you say all the names of anybody that you think could possibly play in this part.
Right.
In all of these parts, and as long as they're good with it, we're good with it, and we'll get them. And so he makes this big fantasy list, but he includes in there John Travolta. And they're like, okay, we're willing to go with you on all of these names except for two. I don't remember who one of them was, but the other one was John Travolta.
Uh-huh.
And he basically said, well, that's the way that I want it. And if you don't want to make the movie that I want it, right. I'm going to go do it with somebody else. Right. And so they're all right. Okay, John Travolta. And he said he'd actually had him in mind for Eric Stoltz's part.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he said he wouldn't have dressed him in the same clothes or whatever, but he was going to be the drug dealer. Once he hung out with him and talked with him for a while, he remembered this article that he had read where the lady was basically saying, you know, Travolta's out, but if there's anybody that needs to be back, it's him because he was so well regarded when he was on the top. But I mean, he went from Saturday Night Fever and all of these incredible movies that just ding, 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 ding down to Look Who's Talking.
Right.
He was straight to video at that point. But anyway, I say all that to say, if he put those lines in, that means that he was already writing the lines for Dennis Hopper. Like, he had Dennis Hopper in mind when he wrote those lines. Because he wasn't there. They offered him, again, they said, hey, do you want to come hang out and be on set while we're filming the movie? And he's like, why? Well, I guess because, you know, I'm either going to be there to make the movie or right. I'm not going to be there to make the movie. And I just want him to just make it how he wants to make it. So let him make it how he wants to make it.
I'm sure Tony Scott appreciated that.
Yeah. But that means that he wrote those lines with Dennis Hopper in mind and Dennis Hopper said yes and took the part. That's fantastic.
Here's another interesting thing. So the Sicilian scene between Hopper and Walken.
Yeah.
Walken was originally scheduled to film his side of the conversation first, right? Uh-huh. So they filmed both sides of it.
Sure.
And Walken was like, you please film his side first, because he was still kind of putting it together in his head what kind of guy he was going to be, right? And these are just two master actors, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
The only thing that I mean, Christopher Walken doesn't super look Sicilian to me.
No.
But he's still great, and so it's easily overlooked, right? Gary Oldman as Drexel Spivey.
Grab a seat, boy. Grab your sofa egg roll. We got everything here from a little eye Joe to damn if I know.
No thanks.
No thanks? What that mean?
I think you're too scared to be eaten.
So freaking brilliant. I mean, the guy's just come off of
Dracula, right?
Dracula. He's Ivan the Zagublad.
He's
Vlad the Impaler, right?
Right. Right.
And then before that, he's in like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, which is a comedy Tom yes. Stoppard movie with Tim Roth. He's a goofball in that one. But we're just seeing the beginnings of what Gary Oldman can be. And then he gets the opportunity to play Drexel, this dreadlocked, bubonic speaking, scar-faced pimp.
Yeah.
And he kills it.
In fact, he said that he went to lunch with Tony Scott, and Tony Scott's like, well, we're still kind of working on it. But he's a white guy who thinks he's black, and he's a killer pimp. And Gary Oldman's like, I'll take it.
That's enough. Sounds for me. Sounds
good. Yeah.
Yeah. And I sent you a clip. It was Gary Oldman still in the makeup.
Uh-huh.
By the way, he called up the guys from Dracula and it's like, I want a scar across my face and the eye out and all of that stuff. Dracula makeup guys came and did Drexel's makeup.
The wig too.
Wig too, yes.
Yep.
But it's just an interview with him, and he's in his regular, you know, British voice, which is great right. to see the dreadlock guy right. with the British voice. But he's talking about Tarantino because nobody knows who this is at this point, right?
Yeah.
He's done Reservoir Dogs and True Romance is coming out, and that's it.
Right? Right, right, right.
But he nails it. He's like, he's this guy who's taken all of these old characters that we all know, and he's made them new in a new way. He's twisted these characters and brought them to life in a way that no one else has done it before. And he could see that on movie number two.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yep. All right, let's talk about Brad Pitt as Floyd.
You guys want to smoke a bowl or go down Beechwood and drive a while, and then you're going to turn right, okay? And then you'll go and you'll keep driving and you'll keep driving.
So I remember, you know, the statute of limitations has passed on this, so I can make some admissions here. I remember going over to a friend of mine's house when I lived in Tulsa, and she was like, we made a honey bear bong. And I was like, you did what? She's like, we made the honey bear bong. And I'm like, what the crap are you talking about? Uh-huh. She's like, we took the bear that has the honey in it, and we took the honey out, and we made a bong out of it. And I was like, why?
Yeah.
She's like, have you not seen True Romance? And I said, no. She's like, we're watching it now. And I said, oh, okay. And so, yeah. Yes, because Brad Pitt smoked pot out of a honey bear.
So he asked for this part. Here's the thing with Brad Pitt. We know he's leading man material, and he goes on to be one of the most famous actors in the entire world.
Right.
So he had done Thelma and Louise, and that kind of broke him out.
Right.
And then he's like, I mean, I'm just kind of a guy who likes to hang around his underwear on a couch all day. That's kind of who I am in my soul.
Right.
But he's so good looking that, you know, the next year after this, he's into Interview with a Vampire. With Christian Slater. And then he's off and running with Seven and Fight Club and all that other stuff, right?
And eventually it comes full circle to Inglourious Basterds, where he's working That's with
right.
Tarantino. Again.
That's right.
Yeah. Here's an interesting tidbit for you before we get to the tidbits.
Yeah.
What happens to Floyd, right? The mafia guys show up at the door and they're asking questions, and he's not lying to them.
You go down for a while and then you turn right.
He's even kind of laughing a little bit. And then it just cuts away. Like, did the bad guys do anything to Floyd? What happened to him? What happened? So that question inspired the movie Pineapple Express.
I love it. I thought that was a great nugget.
This is what happens to a pothead who gets involved in this mess.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's keep going because we've got more stars to talk about
Yeah,
here,
keep
okay?
going. Sorry, yeah.
That's okay. Bronson Pinchot as Elliot Blitzer. Perfect Strangers, but he's playing like the collar-up polo kind of guy, right? Yeah. He's the assistant to Saul Rubinek's character that's based on Joel Silver.
Of course.
Right?
Of course, yeah.
Tony Scott hated Joel Silver.
I can understand that, yeah.
His character, so funny in this. He gets messed up in the drug shootout at the end.
Oh, yeah. I wish somebody would just come and save me. Right. If somebody could just come in and just save me.
Okay. After Bronson Pinchot, you've got Samuel L. Jackson, who's playing Big Don. He's in it for about 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Before he gets blown away.
Yeah. By he Drexel. Was in Coming to America longer than he was in this movie.
That's true. And this is right before Pulp Fiction, which I'm sure that he got a little boost from this movie to get Pulp Fiction, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
He's making interesting characters before he gets blasted for basically no reason.
Yeah. Drexel blows him away.
You've got Michael Rapaport as Dick Ritchie. Right?
Yes, he's great. And I want him in this. I wish he was always this character. I've seen him in so many things where he's like this tough guy, jerk guy. I don't like him as that. He needs to be the goofy, fun-loving moose guy.
Yeah. You know, he was on Quaaludes while they were riding the roller coasters, by the way.
I did not.
Apparently, he and Bronson Pinchot did not like the roller coaster. And they did it for 2 days.
I'm out.
By the way,
I would have had vomit all over my sweater as
2 days. That was filmed at Six Flags Magic Mountain, which is the same amusement park that National Lampoon's Vacation, Wally World. Okay. Saul Rubinek as Lee Donowitz.
Brilliant.
Who is actually Joel Silver.
Right.
When he auditioned for this part, he was with Tony Scott. And when he read the line, Tony Scott's like, okay, you nailed it. That's exactly what the way Joel is. And he's like, Joel? I mean, what?
Uh-huh.
Because I thought I was reading for Lee. He's like, well, you're actually playing Joel Silver.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You have James Gandolfini.
Uh-huh.
Before The Sopranos.
Another great role. And it was this role that got him that part.
He got this part because Tom Sizemore, like, gave it to him.
Oh.
Tom Sizemore was supposed to be that guy.
Right.
He didn't feel super comfortable beating up Alabama. Like, he didn't want to be seen as a wife beater. You know?
So, Tom Sizemore gives Gandolfini this part and takes the part of the cop with Chris Penn?
That's right.
Okay.
These two cops are actually pretty cool.
They're terrible.
Chris Penn and Tom Sizemore as like a pair, though.
It could be in a buddy cop movie together.
They could totally be in a buddy cop movie.
They are a mini buddy cop movie happening in this movie. They absolutely are.
I saw Tom Sizemore talk about when, you know, at the end, when the shootout scene happens, he got killed early.
Yeah.
So, and they shot it. He got it like in the first take.
Yeah.
He said he had to spend 4 days on the floor with feathers in his mouth. So interesting.
These are through thread, by the way, on these two movies, in addition to Tarantino.
Yeah. He's a natural born killer. So we'll talk about him in just a second.
Yeah.
I got one more nugget for you. Jack Black was in True Romance as a usher in the Kung Fu marathon scene.
Really? Oh, okay. So you remember, well, I mean, we quoted at the beginning, it ain't white boy day, is it?
Right.
No, man, it ain't white boy day.
Yeah.
The big bodyguard, no, man, it ain't white boy day.
Yeah.
That's Marty. You recognize him?
No.
Wipers.
Hey, is it really?
Same guy.
Yep. Oh, that's funny. Okay, yeah. Cool. By the way, James Gandolfini, in an effort to capture the sleaziness of his character, stayed in like cheap, crappy hotels.
Okay.
And didn't change his underwear like the whole shoot.
Yeah, okay, that's just gross.
And like didn't shower for days. Like he was wanting to be kind of sweaty and gross.
Okay.
I always go back to when Laurence Olivier talked to Dustin Hoffman. He's like, come on, boy, it's called acting.
Exactly. Okay, so that does it for the cast of True Romance. Guys, be sure and come back next week. We're going to jump in with the cast of Natural Born Killers. We're going to talk about the copycat crimes that followed Natural Born Killers. We'll talk about the soundtracks of these two movies. We're going to give you interesting tidbits. And, of course, we're going to give you final judgment on which of these two Tarantino first script movies.
We will see you back here next week.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.